The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to the KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and back from his holidays to join me in the studio is Steve Turvett from the KM Sports Desk. Today's guest is a manager who took up his current role before some of our listeners were even born. As a player, he was a centre-half turned striker who served Ashford and Folkestone as a teenager before going on to represent Margate, Dartford and Dover. But you'll know him best for his time in the dugout, which began at Hive and then gave him a taste of FA Cup glory back at Ashford. After four promotions, three relegations, six playoff campaigns and more than 1,100 games, he's now preparing for an incredible 23rd season. Yes, 23rd season in charge of Folkestone Invicta. So it's an absolute privilege to welcome the country's longest serving manager, Neil Cugley, to the studio. Neil, thanks for coming in to see us.
Thanks very much, thanks.
Let's start with where we're at the minute, obviously in the close season. How's things shaping up down at Folkestone? I guess you've got quite a settled squad, so probably not as busy as some other managers at this time of year?
No, it's just a bit of chasing around. Obviously, done all the friendlies and got that sorted. We've got the pitch sorted. It looks absolutely superb. And then slowly started going through the players. We had two players that were already signed on for this season. So it's a case of getting through all the others. And I've just about done that. Went away last week for Mother Day and done them all before that, really, apart from Kieran McCann, who signed this week. So done them all, yeah. There's 14 already signed on from last year, but still looking for a couple more to come in just to make us strong.
How pleasing is it to keep so many together?
Yeah, it's very pleasing, and sometimes a bit shocked, you know, and, you know, where we are, a bit tucked away. You know, really pleased that they all agreed to stay on us. I thought I'd lose. I spoke to, obviously, Ronan Edgeman and Michael Everett, my assistants, and we thought we'd lose four or five. So, in the end, to only lose one is very pleasing.
Quite surprised then, I guess, in a way as well. Did you think that was going to be for money, or was that for moving up?
That's just where we are, really, because it's, you know, we're not paupers, I'm not saying that, but we're not big payers, and you know, it's a bit of a trek coming down to us for certain people and their work. Obviously, getting down to us from their work as well is a problem sometimes. So, all in all, we're delighted that they all stayed.
We're coming to your longevity in management, no doubt, in the next hour or so. Throughout, how do you cope in the summer now? Do you approach it in a different way to what you would have done, say, 15 years ago, in terms of making sure your team's together? Is it like back then, the young Neil Cugley, would you be in a rush to do things and think, you know, I've lost this one?
It's always nice to get something balanced out. I think the big difference is now there's so many teams, you know, there's so many teams in Kent. When, you know, going back a few years, there wasn't that many around as such big clubs. You know, you'd pick off a player maybe from Dover or somewhere like that, but generally now there's so many teams, so it's a lot harder.
And I guess that you've already mentioned the location as well. Does that play a big factor in the gaps you've got left to fill now?
Yeah, it does, really. It's trying to get somebody, funny enough, one I thought I'd got, and obviously turned me down yesterday because of the travelling, and you have to accept that, and you know, don't get too upset about it, just move on. Hopefully you get a bit of luck. Obviously you've got all the pre-season games against some good sides, so that they might have somebody you want. Still looking at a couple that will come and hopefully play for me pre-season as well, and go from there.
How do you reflect now on last season, looking back? You just missed out on those playoffs, didn't you?
Yeah, it was disappointing. We didn't start very well, and the year before we done so well, and then going into the I think it was fourth the year before, and didn't quite, a bit up and down really early on. We had a lot of injuries last year. It was disappointing, and I must say I've been ever so lucky over my years of management that I haven't had a lot of injuries, so that did affect us as well. And what's a shame, we got a great run going at the end, and to be 1 point away from the playoffs, I still think if we got in the playoffs we'd have won them, because I think we're on such a run.
Really?
Yeah,
it was. And your approach there for the season just gone different to the one the year before? Obviously, I saw you in that playoff semi-final at Hendon when you were, four down at half-time?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that one.
sorry about that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, did you think there was a bit of a hangover the following, at the start of last season?
Yeah, it could have been a little bit, yes. Yeah, and as I say, with the injuries and yeah, that disappointment, and a couple of players left, and yeah, it was hard to get it going again. You know, that hurt us a bit. We actually had injuries at the Hendon game. We couldn't play different players. Players had to go out and play. And to be fair, Hendon, the front three of Hendon was superb, and all three of them went off to play full-time footballers, you know, and people didn't realise that we were playing against some good players. They were good that day.
And I guess also that one of the things that came out of that interview afterwards with you was you were saying that you wanted the club to be more professional going forward. So from what you just said about a year on, you thought, you know, if you did get in the playoffs, you would have, you know, could have easily cracked it. Do you think that that progress has been made off the field as well?
Yeah, slowly. It's always difficult at Folkestone, I say, because we haven't really got... we're very lucky with Paul Morgan, the chairman, and he does obviously put money into the club, but as he says, he's not a sugar daddy. He hasn't got thousands upon thousands of pounds to put in. So we all have to try and do things right, you know, to put a side out on the pitch that's good enough. We do have to say no to certain things. We don't have coaches to away games anymore. We'll drive, we'll make our own way, but the travel isn't that far, so you know, it's not making it sound too bad. My friend's bought all the home and away kit for next season. He's donated that to the club. My physio doesn't get paid, she doesn't get paid to do it. So those certain areas you try and save on so you can put your money into the team, and that's important. Ideally, yes, you'd love a nice flash coach and have this and have that, but they're not that important. The important thing is getting the money out on the team.
Next season will be your fourth in the Premier Division. You spent a long time working to get up to this level. Yeah. How pleased are you that not only you've been able to consolidate at that level, but make Folkestone competitive?
Well, that was always my aim. You know, I thought, if I've got them into the Premier, well, then maybe I'll call it a day, you know, because I thought, cool, get them in there. I can remember sitting with Jim Pellett and that when we really were in the CVA days and think, cool, wouldn't it be nice to, you know, consolidate in the Rhyme and South as it was then. And we did that, and then suddenly the following year we blew it apart and then we're in the other league. Oh my goodness, what were you doing now? You know, will we survive? And we did survive on the last game of the season. There's about eight or nine teams all trying to stay up on the last day, and lucky enough we did that. And then obviously the year before it was unbelievable, really, to get fourth. And then of course you do well, you want to do well again. It's a bug, isn't it? And I'm really chuffed that we've gone into that league and done all right.
I mean, the last 8 years, pretty much every single year you've seen progression.
Yeah.
In terms of either playoffs and then winning the league and then staying up and then,
yeah,
getting in the playoffs again. I mean, how much further do you think the club can go?
I think it'd be very difficult to plan the Conference South, I'm being honest, with the travelling again. And then you've got to going back there about having to get coaches and to get to the games. And you'd have to be a lot more professional in other ways, you know, to survive that. And I think you would need a lot more money coming into the club for that.
Managers often talk about this as being the busiest time of the year or the most important time. How crucial is it to get your recruitment right, whether you need two players or 20 players?
Yeah, it is important, and that's why it was so pleasing to get everybody signed on, because I still think without the injuries we would have definitely made the playoffs anyway. So I think I've got a good... The team's there, the whole about the four... You know, the four was five defenders have all signed on for next year. The goalie's signed on, or midfield's all signed on. So... You know, it's well known that Adi Yusuf's gone to Dulwich, and he's a big player for us, so he's hard to replace, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that we'll find during the next few weeks.
Is it about being patient, particularly with a striker, because they're so in demand?
Yeah,
so
and they don't want to get the wrong one, do you? We've got a really good team spirit of folks, and everybody gets on, but, you know, that's an area we can look at.
Remind us how you first got into management.
Cool. It goes a long time. It was I was playing for Margate, and a very rich chap took over Hive, and they came to see me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming player manager. And I said, yeah, I'll do it the following after my season finished at Margate. Margate then sort of found out I was going to leave and sort of said, well, I think we should call it a day. And then so I started managing Hive a few months before I thought I was going to, and then went down there and. Obviously, he started to build the stadium and everything, and to be fair, they talk about a sugar daddy, he was one. So we managed to get out of the Kent League straight away, but we fell out the following year, really.
So standing up in front of your team for the first time in the change room, giving a team talk, did all that stuff come naturally to you? How did you find it?
Yeah, it did, really, because I played cricket a lot. I like cricket, and I was captain of the Hythe Cricket Club. Took over from a legend called Dick Apson, and I had to put my own... put myself up front for that, because it was a completely different sort of character. Dick had a few bob and he could buy everybody drinks. I wasn't in that situation, so I had to do it differently, and so when it was no different, really, to go into a football change of him. You know, I was quite believed in what I said and done, really.
How did you find combining the playing and the managing at that stage?
Didn't find no difficult. We didn't have big squads. I'm not a big squad now, but you did only have a small squad, so everybody sort of knew enough, knew they're playing, and I'm not being big headed. I thought I was quite a good player at centre. I was going back to centre half then. I was big and strong and quite. I'm 6'2" and quite big, so people weren't going to argue with me anyway. I think I got respect quite quickly, really. And at that time at Ashford, we weren't trying to do anything spectacular anyway. It was just to keep it going, really.
Mm. The years that you had at Ashford gave you some really good times, didn't they, in League and Cup?
Yeah, it was just a great time. It was a great time socially as well. It was some good characters there, and it was a bit like Folkestone to a certain when I got there. I thought, oh, good, here we go. And then they invite me to a ball meeting after I'd been there about 3 or 4 months and said, this is how much we owe. And it was a lot of money. So we sold a lot of players quickly. I think we sold about £100,000 worth of players in the first two years I was there. But then we started consolidating, and then we had the cut run. So I was managed to start bringing some of the players we'd sold and bring them back to people like Dave Arter, Jeff Ross, Carl Winters, well-known players at that time, and had a great time. And socially it was good then as well. It was a great spirit after the game. And
how much does that help the football side of things if people are getting on off the pitch and having
more,
a good time?
More in those days, really, because it was it's no secret it was there was a drinking culture around football then. Not on a Friday night, I'll give them duty, but on a Saturday that was their day out. And it was just an unbelievable spirit, and the spirit on a coach on the way home then, because he was going to grounds a long way away. It's not like now where I was saying earlier about driving to games, but we're not going far. But in them days, he was going to Merthyr Tydfil's and Dorchester, Weymouth, Kingslands. He'd be on a coach for 4 or 5 hours on the way home. You had nothing else to do. It was days before mobile phones and music and all that, really. You just got there and just took the mickey and drank beer all the way home and got on so well. That's why the players so well now, that I hang around with them and still talk to them now, because they were so close to me.
How does that compare to the current day, in that people might pop on a pair of headphones or be on their phone and maybe not chatting so much?
Yeah, and I think it's disappointing because you don't get to know them so well, but give credit to the players. They're super fit. They look after themselves so well. So you can't really say, look, come on, let's drink these beers. It's not right, And football has kicked on that in that way. And, all credit to local players. I think they're tremendously fit now. You go and watch a game, you don't see any... they used to call them barrel-chested footballers. Well, I think they were fat, really. Now they're great. I think players at non-league level, and obviously where it's full-time, it's their job differently, but non-league footballers are credit to themselves.
Was it the FA Cup memories at Ashford that really stick in your mind?
Well, yeah, because you just didn't expect that. As I said there, we were just trying to keep the club going at one stage and selling all the players and everything. It just suddenly we were just doing quite well in the game. I think we played Aldershot and then we beat them or somebody like that, and then the draw, Fulham at home, was unbelievable. And it was one of the first games that Sky done, and it was just incredible, really. They did a 12-minute thing, and it was pouring with rain, and it should never have been on, but I think it was because of Sky, and they got two penalties right then. We were 2-0 up, and Mickey Adams got two penalties for them, scored them. So we went back to Fulham. What at the time we're disappointed because we hadn't won the game, but it was great going to Fulham, playing at Craven Cottage, and the players were. Oh, it's just a great night in the club's history.
Do you remember the draw when it was made? What was it done on a? I mean, presumably it wasn't done on a Monday night like it is nowadays and all that.
It's a long time ago. It was done on a Monday lunchtime, in them days. And just, I think somebody just rang me. Guess who we got? Fulham at home. I just couldn't believe it.
And Fulham at the time.
They were all well-known players, but they weren't doing very well in the sense of trying to work out the divisions then. I think they'd been, Division 3, what it was then. So, but it was just a great, great day for the club, and he just never thought that it'd ever happen. And then 2 years later, we'd gone to Watford, the same thing. But we knew we had them. We drew it home to Dagenham, and then we went to Dagenham, and it went to penalties. And I couldn't look at the penalties because we knew we had Watford away, and really it's going to be been the biggest game of my time or career. And, to go there, it was great. But they hammered us 5-0.
When you know that you've got that prize if you go and win the replay, are you thinking... as a manager, more about this could be a really big payday for the club, or the experience and, you know, the memories you could create?
Yeah, in those days, there wasn't the money then. There wasn't, although Sky obviously paid us money for being there, and you did get it, the money's all gone, well, it was quite rightly, it's gone into a lot more, you know, into the earlier games. It wasn't really about the money, it was the fact of going to obviously to Watford or to go to Fulham. You know, for the clubs I was at, there were chances, I mean, they've done it before and I've never done it again, you know. It was such an achievement for Ashford to get there, and even at Folkestone, okay, we only went to Chester, and Chester were a league club then, but that was just such a lovely time to go, and we stayed up there for a couple of nights, and it's just the magic of the FA Cup, for especially for teams that haven't thrown thousands of £1,000 at it, have just earned that chance.
Yeah, I can see, just talking to you about the FA Cup and those memories, that kind of the twinkle in your eye. Do you think it's as special for all managers and all clubs nowadays?
Yeah, you hope so. But I said sometimes it's the money, you know, that's how football's become, that they'll throw money at it to try and get further in the cup, won't they, to recoup their money back, you know. So it's a little bit different way of, I suppose, chairman's look at it differently now. And it's become, you know, hope we win that game because we can earn this much. It wasn't really like that in those days, because it was just about getting through and playing the big games.
Mm. And do you think some of the gloss has gone off some of those FA Cup ties, where it is a non-league club, for example, that do splash the cash, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're drawn against a League Two team or a big National League side or something like that? Is it
to a certain extent,
does it still have the same feel?
Yeah, but it's quite nice for sort of Haringey last year, wasn't it? And they done well, bless them, and that's good. I think that's good for a club like that. So no, I think to be fair, the BBC have made it good now, because they made it all the games, haven't they? And you can go on a Sunday as well. They've got another 12 games, don't they? You show the scores coming. So I think the way they've pushed that sort of the FA Cup and that, I think you've got to give them a lot of credit for.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
When you took over at Folkestone in 97, paint a bit of a picture. What was the club like then?
Well, what happened, I was at Ashton when they got a new... We just had the year after the FA Cup, and we was in the Southern League Premier, and it was hard. It was a hard league, and they had a new chairman, and well, not a new chairman, a new director came on, and I just sensed something weren't right. And at the same time, somebody came to me about maybe going to Folkestone, and it was only because this new chap joined at Ashford, I thought, well, yeah, I think it's time for me to move on. So I obviously got a chance to go to Folkestone. It was in the Kent League. I had a great time at Folkestone as a player, so it just seemed the right time to move on again, you know.
Was it a very different club then to what we know now?
Oh, I think it's always been a good club. I think it's always been a friendly club, and it was a good club to when I was 18 or 17 when I played there. And it was very good when I went back at 26. I enjoyed my time there then, and everybody that seems to play at Folkestone seemed to quite enjoy it, even long time ago I'm talking about as well. And as modern times, it's always been sort of a fairly relaxed atmosphere.
And the good thing was, you really hit the ground running, didn't you, going in as manager with a couple of promotions and getting up to the Southern Premier?
Yeah, it was funny. We obviously got out of the Kent League. It was good, because we made the mistake of finishing third the first year in the Southern South. And that meant next year the only way to improve that is getting promoted. And we got promoted. And that was an achievement and a half, really, to get back at the Southern League Premier again. It was a big, good standard to do it so quickly as well. And then we consolidated. And in one of the years, we had a really good side, and we were top at sort of September time, end of September, October. And a bit of investment, we would have been in the conference, no doubt about it. And we had that good enough side. But then slowly things got a little bit
tight. Was it finances that dictated that?
Yeah, it was in the end. We around Christmas, they asked if we could cut it a little bit, so you cut it a bit, and then you finish up mid-table, and the next year we finish up relegated because we just didn't have any money at all.
At the time, I guess you was about the third biggest club in Kent as well.
Yeah, I think we were. It was because Jules was struggling then. There was Maidstone had nearly gone. Dartford weren't doing anything. You know, they had their problems. And we were suddenly bigger than Dover. It was, you know, just unbelievable, really. It was, you know, we had a really good side. And, you know, but obviously then they all got bigger and better, and, you know, they had the catchment area and the fan base to move on, really. Although our fans are great, and we've been lucky, we was only still getting 350, 400, so finances did dictate in the end.
Let's talk about some of the players that you worked with around that time or in the following years. Jimmy Dryden, for starters, how did you get the best out of him?
Jim was in our youth team, actually, as a sort of a left-back, I think. And then we had a reserve team then, and Paul Fiske was running the reserve. I think, what about Jim pushing him up front? I said, well, I think so. Yeah, he's got the build. He's got a good left foot. Yeah, well, let's go with it. So, and then he scored a few goals and then suddenly went in the first team and never looked back, really. And then we sold him, well, a few years later, we sold him to Dover.
I spoke to him a few years ago and he said that you used to bring out the wild side in him. You had to make him angry to really get him going. Was that just something you worked out? I've kind of got a, you know, almost
well,
spark him into action.
I got more goals than him, so he used to hate that. Every new signing I got, he used to say, oh, Jim's our striker. He didn't get as many goals as me. And Jim would say, oh, not that story again. He used to, but no, Jim's a great lad. I really get on well with him.
You just looked at him and you thought, I've got to get a reaction from him for him to go out on the pitch and use his build to his best.
Yeah, it really was, you know, he's good build and aggressive, great in the air, and when he was a good player. Yeah, good player.
How important was that to look around your changing room and decide that, okay, he needs an arm around the shoulder and he needs me to tell a story that's going to wind him up, to that not every player was the same?
You did right. I think the stories, and as I said, it was a little bit different then. It wasn't so much arm around the shoulder, and players have changed now. You have to be a little bit more politer, and you know the stories of, you know, the teacups flying about and people being held against the wall, they're all true. That's like how it was in football and in those days, where it's not like that anymore. But you sometimes had to get into people. And that's how we was all brought up. I was brought up that way as a player as well. You know, you had to have respect for the senior pros, otherwise you'd be in trouble.
So do you feel you've had to change your approach and maybe rein it back a little bit?
Definitely.
Because those things you wouldn't get away with now?
No, not nowadays. No, you know, and I think it's right in some ways. They're employed people. You talk to them as employees, really. And, you know, you wouldn't be able to start. You're not in your job here, would you? You wouldn't be able to, your boss came in and started throwing things around. And you still lose your temper, or you show that you're passionate about what you do. Because you've got to show them, the players, that you're passionate about what you're doing, you know, and it hurts to lose, and you want them to feel the same.
How much of that is an act in the sense that you are showing them to get a reaction, and how much is it you genuinely being annoyed by giving away a penalty in the last minute or missing a chance and you go in and you are fuming?
Yeah, sometimes the anger's there, and if you've got a bit of a temper like I've got, you sometimes say things maybe afterwards you sort of regret. Half-time's really important thing. Whatever the score, whether winning or losing, you've got to be switched on to that, and sometimes you've got to show... I always think after the game you're just shouting for something to do, really, because you lost the points, you know. But half time is so important, because you might be just in front and you want to win that game, or you've got to try and come back, you know, if you're losing, how you can get better. And sometimes you do lose your temper then to get a reaction that you want people to really show, come on, we can get back into this game.
I gather there was a rather unfortunate bin in your changing room one game where I think you put your foot through it and eventually you end up getting stuck in the bin.
Yeah, I couldn't get the foot out the bin. Then the players want to laugh, but they don't laugh. I'm looking there. And, I've had a few things with bins. I remember there's a flip-flop on a bin, you know, a flip lid, and I'm kicked out when I was at Ashford. I look round the next minute, I see my right back, Andy Morris, he's got the thing on his head, you know, and he couldn't do it if I tried, but you've got to kick something sometimes, so.
But important also to separate that emotion immediately after the game and then the bit where you go in the bar and spend time with the players and the fans.
Yeah, it is, especially now. I say Ashford days were different because, it was more of a drinking culture there. Now there's not really. So, you know, and my wife runs the bar upstairs anyway, and afterwards, you've got to be a completely different person, really. You've just got, that's gone, it's finished. You know, as I said there, you can't change the result then. It doesn't mean, you know, obviously I'm not very happy and can't wait to get home and just be miserable, but, you know...
You can't make it personal.
No, you can't afterwards. That's it. It's finished. You know, I always say to the players what I say down there. And that's the other thing. You've got to be honest with them that what I say in the change rooms, I'm not going to go wandering upstairs and say, oh, I said that to him. I said that. No, that's... you've got to keep them separate.
You said, Neil, that it was more common back in the day to, you know, have the teacups flying and bins in your case going around the dressing rooms. How regular are you talking? Are you talking every defeat, or is it just from time to time that you lost the anger?
Lucky my record's not too bad, so didn't have to do it too often. So yeah, sometimes anger when somebody's done something wrong that, you know, you told them about. You know, you said you're picking them up on the corner and they haven't. You know, it's more they're the silly things, but. the players are angry as well themselves sometimes, you know, it's all goes on. And as I say, years ago it'd be pinning people against the wall and they'd be shouting at you and it'd all go off, but it's a different era now, really.
And do you still have bins in the dressing room at folks?
I've still got one. It's a bit cold in it at the moment, so we're just repairing that. So there was a couple of defeats there that, yeah, water bottles, the other thing, just keep them away from people. And but honestly, you're only talking about one or two games a year, really, where does, you know, because you've got, you know, sometimes you lose games where you play quite well, you just can't, then it's a different thing. It's just sheer disappointment.
We've got a few old cut-ins on the desk in front of us, including your sort of all-time 11. We did that a few years ago. Jimmy Jackson, one of the other names in there.
Oh, yeah,
how did you go about bringing him down to Folkestone?
Obviously, I remember Jim playing for, I think it was Gravesend then, before. Just what a player. I can remember him just going one night and scoring a goal, and he just ran with the ball and, you know, in nine his own half, ran about another 30 yards. And I thought, what a left foot. And it just came about. I can't remember the conversation. I'm not sure if I got him from Margot or Gravesend, and so he got a chance of getting him. And what a lovely bloke as well, just a quality footballer. We had to change his style of play a little bit. He was more the holding midfielder. Eventually, still get forward every occasion, just ping balls in. But and we had a thing where he never used to hardly do the warm up because he was struggling a little bit with kind of injuries. But we just let him, once he got him on the pitch. And he hardly ever missed a game, to be fair. And funny enough, he still calls me Gaffer now. If I hardly ever see him, but he suddenly will come down and class player. Class.
And because of
class.
What he brought to the team, the other players didn't have a problem.
Well, we got him when we had a few ball and was trying to get out the league, and we were doing really, really well. I think I was top of the league, and yet again the money got cut. So, but Jim never left, and we wanted to keep him, and he became very important, him and Darren Smith, of helping all the youngsters, and they're both really nice people. So the younger lads weren't frightened of him. You know, there wasn't the old, what we're going back, of lads pinning people against the wall. It was all done in a respectful manner, and they loved Jimmy and Darren Smith, so it worked really, really well.
And Jimmy said that kind of your personality, your sort of infectious character, that was really important when you met for the first time to talk about him signing, you know, those meetings face-to-face with the player. I guess it's an important time for both of you.
It's funny you say that, because I don't think I am that sort of outgoing personality, but when a lot of players have said that once, and I know I do rather, I'm not so good on texting as anybody will tell you, or I haven't got an email address and all that, so it's better if I meet, and I do try and meet players, if at least I can put over what we're trying to do at the club. And yeah, a lot of times I finish up signing players I never thought I would sign.
On the flip side of that, I guess you are trying to work out if this player is going to be right for the not only for the team, but for the changing room as well. How do you judge that?
I think once you sit him down, and always, in the old days, obviously you meet him in a pub, but now you meet him at the service station. And
Costa coffee.
Yeah, get him a coffee. Now I get myself a coffee and give them a bottle of water. They always seem to be on water, and they always say, so I make sure that's there for them. And you say, just try and sell them the club and say the right things. And I think if they say how much straight away, then I think this ain't going to work. You know, because we're not the richest. I've got to try and, you know, they're trying to go ask for a little bit more and I want to pay them. So then you try and find this happy medium, and you like the club. This is what the club, and maybe then I'll explain. And the nice thing is a lot of the teams are at folks, and they know the players have been there a long time. So if it wasn't a good club, players would be on the move all the time.
You have always been loyal to players, haven't you?
Yeah, and I try and put that over a bad time. We're not going to suddenly leave you out because we don't have a big enough squad. So, you know, we play around with a smallest squad, and, you know, you'll always be in the squad, and, you know, should hopefully mostly playing.
You know, such a small world, football, that players talk to each other. If people are treated well, they're going to tell that to their friends, people that you might want to sign.
Well, it's ironic, you know, what you're talking about there. We're talking about meeting pubs and all that now. Of course, they're always in the gym, and when they say, you know, I say to her, do you meet? Say, oh, yeah, I met him the other day. He was in the gym. And so that's how conversations start now.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
The club was hit by major tragedy, wasn't it, in 2005 when you lost Paul Sykes. Mm. Can you tell us your memories of that?
Oh, yeah, mate, even now, God, don't. It was horrendous. We was playing Margate in the Kent Senior Cup semi-final, I think it was, wasn't it? And the goalie there sort of just caught the ball and just pushed Sykesy back a little bit, and then Sykesy sort of went backwards, and he just toppled over. And I remember Chris Kinnear, sort of, he's managing my, and he sort of half laughed, and we laughed, what's that all about? Then, I don't know, suddenly everything goes, hang on, Blaise, he's gone flat. He's not moving. And you think, oh, my God, Dave Williams, my, bless him, physio at that time, went running on the pitch. And you just know it's not right. He just knows, Christ, this is not good. And I just didn't have it. You know, he's no good me going, I can't do anything. I don't know anything about this. Dave Williams had obviously been trained and that to deal with it. And the next minute, I always remember, I looked at Mark Monday and Mark went, just went, like that. Not good, shook his head, and it was horrendous. And then the ambulance arrived. I jumped in my car and just sort of got to go. Whatever happens, I've got to go. I've got to follow the ambulance to the Ashford hospital. Mickey Dix, who's with me, then jumped in the... He said, I'll come with you, and was driving along, following the ambulance. It was blue light flashing away. And then after a little while, it slowed down. And then I thought, uh-oh, because it's no rush to get there. The worst thing about that was when we was at the hospital, Carly Sykes, his wife, turned up thinking he'd had a head injury, you know, football injury, and didn't know. And the doctor pulled her aside and in the next room, the biggest scream you could ever hear. And never forget that. Horrible.
How did that impact you going through something like that?
It hurt me. It's funny we talk about it now. I could cry now with that, but... it was about a few days later. So much was going on because it was just at the time when social media started, so you could put a lot of message on. And a lot of good things came out of that, and that was always very good. And it was a few weeks later, really, and I did a little bit of driving, fruit and veg at the time, delivering, and I remember just pulling over and, you know, cried over that.
Mm. And I guess it was still your job, obviously, to manage the players and to look after them. That must have been so tough.
Yeah, it was the only... The only thing was, it was near the end of the season, and the funeral was on a Friday, and we had, I think it was Heybridge on the Saturday at home, and all the players just stayed down, and that was one day I didn't care what they did, and I think we lost the, I think we couldn't find Kess the goalie for most of the next day, bless him, he'd been out, and everybody just went out and got too many drink, and you know, and we lost the next game 2-0, but nobody really cared, and I think it was our last home game of the season, so then it sort of went from there. But I still keep in touch with Carly, and yeah, she was such a nice lady as well. Yeah, that was a horrible time.
I mean, a very different type of challenge that you faced also at Folkestone on the financial side of things. I mean, where did those financial problems start, and how did you get through that period with the CVA and everything that went with it?
Well, as a manager, you don't know what's going on. You don't really get involved in the fight. I never went to board meetings or anything. I was only basically the manager, and you're told what your budget is. Now, we've had times before where, as I said, it's been cut, or, you know, or whichever chairman you have, and say, look, we're a bit over. Can we, you know, we're not really ready to go up, or can you, you know, can you just do that? And you say, OK, fair enough. You know, you understand. But this one was a bit different because everybody had sort of gone, and we had, yeah, had a good side, quite a good side, had some good players, and you know, you just thought, what's going on? And I can always remember I came pre-season friend. I just carried on as normal. Spoke to, I think it was Mark Jenner then, who was the director, and he went and said, you'll have to be chairman, mate. I'll see. We managed to get a secretary, so we got a chairman and a secretary, had one director and myself, really, and that's all we had. And this chap was helping doing the books at the time, and bless him, he just shook his head and gave me this envelope. It was the first day of pre-season, and it was a tax bill for £9,000, pay it or you're closing it down. Doesn't sound a lot of money, but when you've got nobody with any money and you've got a 9,000, they close it down in a couple of weeks. Yeah, and there was other things obviously we owed as well, and but we got through it, and yeah, and it was, in fact, we finished having quite a good season. So
How did you do that?
I think we just sold the season tickets, and it's just, we seemed to then just keep going and going, and we had a good youth team, so a lot of them played. And as I say, we still had a few good players, and we managed. Just the supporters club were very good at that time. They put some money in, and we just kept going and going, and we were top of the league, I think. Yeah, we were top of the league, and then we had to go into the CVA, so we lost 10 points, but we're doing well, so we still finished second and got promoted. But that was the worst thing, really, because we had no money. We've gone up, we've got a very young side, it was just too much for us, and it's one of these things, you've got relegation next to my name on one of these years. Yes. Yeah, and that was one of them where we was just into a league that we couldn't cope, and we got CVA anyway, we're trying to pay that back, so we couldn't really pay any players, so it was difficult.
Extraordinary, though, that you did manage to get that promotion with such a young side and the points deduction.
Well, as you know now, Croydon, who won it, they finished up the enough going broke because it was all to do with the dodgy money and all that. So we were paying hardly anything and we finished second. It was, and we would have won the league. We only lost, they took 10 points away and we finished 6 points short. So we would have won the league. And that was just incredible. And all we did was laugh all the way through. We had such a young side, apart from Jacko and Darren Smith, we just laughed. All we did made everything fun. We had a squad of 11. It's no lie. You look, we had the same team for about 26 games in a row. We just put anybody on the bench. I think Jimmy Dryden had come back, but he was no good because he hurt his knee and he was sub-goalie, and Mickey Dixon would be sub. We had nobody. And it was, and then Simon Austin got sent off about March time, and we brought in another lad just to play the last few games. But we just made it good fun. We didn't put pressure on the players, because for the young lads, and they were great. And when the points got took away, they never said anything, because they'd never been in the situation. They were only 17. They didn't know, did they? They just got on with it.
Was that why Jimmy and Darren were so integral in terms of helping those young
players? Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was just great. And they just seen it all before and just got on with it and just calmed down and played, you know. Tremendous.
Other managers at other clubs, faced with what you're faced then, would have said, no, not for me, I'm out. Why stay? Why did you do it?
It's weird because at the time, I knew we had quite a good side. So you think, well, as long as we can pay them, and, you know, as I said, it was enjoyable because we was doing well. The following year was the hardest one because we were in a league now we shouldn't be in. We can't get no money, and you just know it's just playing out the season, and that's hard. And I've had that twice. We had that before in the Southern League Premier, where we had no money and you just, but we always knew we had a good side the following year. And that year we got relegated. Jimmy Dryden was just coming through, and Alan Tate. So I had them both for the start of next year. I'd signed them on a 2-year. So, okay, we have a rubbishy year in the Southern League Premier, travelling everywhere. But the next year we could have a good season again, and we did.
How did you make it so much fun for the squad when you was going through that CVA then? Was it the results that created the fun bit because you're winning a lot, or was it the other way around?
A little bit of both, really. We just thought, we just get the players to enjoy it. And, you know, people like Liam Friend, Frankie Chappell was playing. They were 18, and they were just a nice bunch of lads anyway. A lot of them were local, so they thought it was an honour to play for Folkestone, you know, as well. It didn't cost us hardly anything. They were on £20 or £30 a week. And off you go, lads, you know, and I think, you know, if you talk to them now, you say maybe it was their best time they've ever had.
How much satisfaction do you take from the fact that a large number of that squad have either gone on to play higher or are still going strong now?
Yeah, I do. Because I think they knew they enjoyed it and they understood football. You know, Liam Friend, Frankie Chappell, two people have played with me for 10 years maybe. And they were tremendous people. They just got the crack. They enjoyed their football. They'd have a drink on a Saturday night. But you knew they weren't drinking on a Friday, that their football was the main thing. And they were good people, you know. And Josh Birchall was the left back, JV right back, you know, still playing. You know, Liam Dixon still playing. You know, so he is right. They've still kept going and done the right things.
Tell us a bit about Johan ter Horst when you first realised that you had a talent on your hands.
Well, it's funny because when you talk about the money, as we done well that year, we suddenly everything just went all right. We finished up doing all right. We sold all the season tickets and they were gone as a good season. Got some season ticket money, so that kept us going. And we plugged away and we got Boovie was playing for us at the time. So everything just sort of fell into place. We finished up, Johan came out of our youth team, and you could just see it was quality, you know, scoring goals in our youth team. They'd win 3-2 and they'd get all three, you know, and things like that. So we started him getting him in the side with Boovie, who, again, a great lad and really helped him. And that all sort of, everything just went lovely that year because we got in the playoffs. OK, we didn't win them. I think Johan missed a penalty, actually, in the playoff final. But he was being watched, and we got in the playoffs that earned us a lot of money. Somebody died and left us not a lot of money, but a few grand. And so everything's just developed nicely. And Johan was getting better and better. Clubs were watching him. And then Dean White, who was involved, obviously Steve Bruce's good mate, and he was scouting for Hull. And he came down to watch, he said, and he'd heard good things. And the day he came down to watch, Johan was different class. And then they just phoned up and said they would like to take him. There's other clubs watching him, but obviously being a Premier, it was just perfect, and we made 20-25 grand out of it. And, you know, ever since then our finances have helped, really.
I remember speaking to you at the time and you said that you must have taken hundreds of phone calls because there was so much interest in it. It must have been a hectic time.
Yes, it was. It was like, everything was going on. And ironically enough, I was my wife's birthday and we'd just gone away to Spain for a few days. And that's actually when we just was doing the deal at the time. I was on the phone all the time. But it was nice. I was away with a couple of friends who, funnily enough, played for Folkestone years ago. We live out there now, and we got it put on the bottom of the Sky Sports, to horse, hole to hole. So that was well chuffed with that.
When you get interest in players, Neil, do you know the phone's going to ring? Do you know in training, think, oh, this kid's going to go somewhere?
Does work a little bit the other way, because sometimes as well you're trying to push the lad on for financial reasons for the club. Sometimes we go, think this would be good if we can get a set player sold, so you're doing a little bit yourselves, and other times it's the other way around where obviously they're chasing the player, but sometimes you're sort of, Scott Hurd went to Dagenham and it was me that phoned up Stilly. I said, I think you should look at this lad now, and obviously I sold him to Dagenham. Harry Smith was being looked at by a couple of clubs, did phone, but I then phoned up another clubs and said, come and have a look at him. And then, you wouldn't stand in their way anyway, and I never would to anybody who can become a professional footballer, and folks and make some money out of it, so everybody's happy.
Johan's parents spoke about you in real glowing terms at the time because of how you looked after him and made sure that he was in touch with the right clubs, and it was the right move. I mean, you basically were his agent, weren't you? Almost a bit of a father figure for him as well.
Yeah, I suppose so, because to be fair, they live in Hythe where I do, so obviously I know them really well, and they're nice people, and it was nice to do it all right. At the end, it didn't work out in the way he would have liked it, but what a great opportunity, and obviously he's Maguire and all these people he knows, and he's talking to people like that, and top players he knows, and it's quite funny when he's on the phone to him, and he's just a Yaron's a really nice chap anyway. And the parents didn't speak to me so much last year, because I left him out a couple of times, so it does work the other way sometimes.
As you say, he's back with you now as a player. Do you still see the same player that you had coming back through then?
I think the disappointment for him hurt a little bit. Obviously, coming back, he went to Maidstone, obviously, before us, and Jay did phone up Edgy, and Edgy recommended him and said it didn't quite work out for him, and then he seemed to pick up a few injuries, what he did last year. What we're really hoping this year that he can get back to, because he's a quality player.
Speaking about Edgy, how important has he become in terms of your right-hand man? He kind of really stepped up and become established, hasn't he?
Yeah, I've been so lucky, because I've had some really good people, number twos, you like to call them, whatever. I've had some great people that's helped me, and Mark Saunders, Mark Patterson, Scott Lindsay, so I've been ever so lucky to have people like that, and Edgy becomes, he's very important, so is Michael Everett. Michael Everett takes, we talk about what we're doing in training, notice about 62, and I don't want to be doing that side so much, and Meb does a lot of that. Edgy's, I would say, he's very good in the change room, and I think, he's got respect for where he's played and what he says, so they're both very, very, very important to our club.
Very good in the sense of what he says, or just how he is around the players?
What he says, really, is just common sense. It's good. I think we don't talk nonsense to players. We're not people that's phoning them all up all the time or texting them. We just let players go and play, and then we'll just try and put them into the right areas and do the right things, and just say, look, try and do this better. And as long as they try and do that better, you feel like you're getting somewhere, and that's how we do it. We're quite fairly relaxed by it, really.
Is it important for you as the manager to be able to delegate those other roles,
definitely,
so that it isn't not always your voice that the players are hearing?
Oh, definitely, yeah, because it does get a bit... Yeah, you did. No, it works really well. Obviously, I'm the main... When I go in the change room, even if we've talked about which player, team or whatever we're going to do, I've always said to the players, at the end of the day, this is the team I've picked, even if though we've discussed it and we might have changed it a little bit. They've got to realise that... Well, it ends with me, really, otherwise it doesn't work. But then, obviously, Edgy's, you say, got the respect. And Michael Everett was great doing the training last year as well. Really, really has kicked on, done it well. And I'm sure he'll finish up a manager somewhere.
Do you think Edgy will as well? Do you see him as a potential?
The only problem is your job and your family. And, you're tied to the phone. People, I don't think, realise how... And that's always do is when I hear somebody's lost their job that I know, I always, wish them all the best. You know how hard they've worked at it. Managers do work hard at it, and it's non-stop on the phone now.
Do you think Michael Everett perhaps might succeed you at Folkestone?
I don't know. It's difficult to know which way, you know, how the folk, which way folks will go. If there's a big investor come in, they might want their own man, and the training facilities might be in London, mightn't they? So things can change, but I'm sure he'll go into management, and yeah, he would be a good one at Folkestone. If not, I'm sure he'll do it somewhere else.
So in your opinion, would that be a good thing for Folkestone if someone was to come in and put a bit of money into the club? Does it need that if they're to go to the next level?
I think you lose a little bit of a club when you start. I know Margate and obviously Dover, they don't train down our way at all. You know, they're training up the motorway, and you could see why. Is it good or bad? I think you miss the thing when you're training in a youth team on one half the pitch and you're on the other half of the 3G at the back sort of thing, because that gives that closeness to the club, and everybody, it's all around the club. But you've got to be honest, most of the players, I disrespect, the better players do come from London Way.
What is it about non-league football that you love so much? I think you've been involved in it for pretty much half a century, haven't you?
I used to watch it at Folkestone, so you just felt so close to the players, because you know, then although they're in your own eyes sort of superstars, they're not really, because you see them in the bar and things like that. I like the social side of it as well. It was buzzing. It was just nice. And the nice thing about non-league for me as a manager, it's not their job. You know, they're not depending on me, really. Where it's a bit higher sometimes for these other people, like it must be Dover or Mason. It's their job, really. Where, to be fair, I leave a player, they will just go around the corner or go somewhere else. It's not life changing unless you're putting them into Football League.
It's nice to have you here, because in a way, because it's making me feel quite young today.
Thank you much.
Because you're the first guest that we've had in that I don't remember seeing play football. I never saw you play.
No.
So I know you don't really want to talk a great deal about your playing career, but I'm going to ask you about it, because I'm intrigued, if no one else is anyway.
Thank you much.
But one year that did stand out for me when I looked back was Folkestone, 46 goals in a season at Folkestone.
I don't mind talking about that one. That's a good one.
Go for it. Not all through 46 individually.
I try and pretend I know each one, but I don't. It was just happened. I was obviously a centre-half, and there was a couple of chances. I nearly made it into Football League, and they was talking to me about going to Charlton and this and that. But I was 26, and I was playing at 25. I was playing at Dover. Just at the end of the season, centre-forward got injured, so I finished up playing the last three games, I think, at Dover, and I got three goals. At the same time, Dover went sort of broke, so Folkestone came up for me, and it's my local club, and Alf Bentley was manager then, phoned me out and said, would you like to come back to Folkestone? Because obviously Dover, you know, have gone broke at that time. And I said, yeah, but what position? He said, centre-forward. I said, yeah, I'll definitely come back, because I felt I needed a change. And it was great, and I'm not sure I got a hat-trick or two goals in my first game, and it was great. Just went on from that, and I've played with, and we had such a good side though as well, people like Pat Horton and Dave Wiltshire would play for Jules and all that, and Damien Richardson would play for Ayr and obviously play hundreds of games, and we had such a good side, and socially again it was brilliant, you know. And there I am scoring goals and from a home team with a bunch of people I really liked as well. It's just brilliant.
So was you a frustrated defender back in the day then?
I just needed a change. It's just I'd done four clubs, I'd moved everywhere, not been big headed. I'd been sold to Margate, sold to Dartford, sold to Dover, and I just, where do I go next, you know? And it was just perfect timing, you know. And although I was a biggish boy, I was quite, and I wouldn't say I was fast, but I was quite strong, and once I got away from people, I say, I played with a lad called Pat Hilton, who played for Brighton and Jules, and he helped me through the games, really. He was just different class. Although I got 46 and he got, I think, 5, he used to say he got 51 between us, and I would not have got my goals if it wasn't for him. He was so good.
But yeah. 46 in one season is some achievement, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was. It was just one of those things. Ask Jimmy Dryden.
Well, you know, we don't want to go on about who's got more goals, do we? When you was at Folkestone before, Margate, Dartford, Dover, were they happy times going
for
those clubs?
Yeah, brilliant. No, I loved it. Loved it. I just said, we were talking about there, was loved non-league football. It was just great. And it was, I didn't mind moving clubs, so I like to meet different people. It's ironic with the management, I've stayed very loyal, but as a player, I quite enjoyed moving around. Felt, met a lot of people, tried to prove myself to other fans as well, because you've got to show you're a good player because you move to clubs. If you just stay at one club, sometimes you're taken for granted a little bit.
and I guess moving for money as well in terms of transfer fees. So you obviously, you know, must have been highly rated by the managers that were bringing you in as well.
Yeah, they sold me quite quick as well. So but no, it's good. Yeah, you know, to get to Margot with Dennis Hunt as manager there, and then Graham Carr was manager at Dartford. For these people to think you're worth money, and they say it wasn't a lot of transfer fees going around at that time. But yeah, it was a privilege really.
And you said you were close to going to the Football League. Was that how close it was?
I think. Yeah, in them days you didn't have agents, and I think if I had an agent, I think I would have got into Football League, because I went to Charlton on training, and they told me where I was going to live, and I was all this, and next minute I wasn't anywhere. I thought it was a bit strange. You don't know the full stories. Where this is where our agents can be more helpful.
Do you look back on it now with a bit of regret that you weren't a top player?
No, not really. You don't know if you went there if you'd make it anyway, do you? So, but at that time when I went to Charlton, it was a lovely club. There was people know so well at that time, So that I was disappointed I didn't go there. Went to West Brom for 3 months it was meant to be a week's trial. It just went on, so they never sent me back. So I just kept staying up there. So, and that was good, played at Anfield for West Brom reserves. It's great, you would never do that now, so that was good. No regrets about anything I've done in non-league football, really.
So when you was on trial at West Brom, was you up front or in?
No, centre half. More centre half then.
Do you think you might have made it as a forward?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I was quick enough. My touch weren't that great.
How was the majority of your 46 goals? How were they scored then?
Mostly bundled in, I think, and the keeper looking at me, and I'm running to look at him. And
Jimmy Dryden's listening. You might want to pick yourself up a little
great
bit more.
Goals in there, top corner. That's a good one. It's one great one at Dartford I'll never forget, because I just left Dartford really as a centre half, and I got a great goal there that even the lads now still talk about. So
is that why they named a street after you?
Yeah, I think so. That's where the ball might have finished, I think.
Go on, talk us through that goal then. What was that?
Oh, just come over over my shoulder, and I've hit it on the volley, and it's gone in the goal. And of course, like Roger Keane was in goal, and I played with him a year before as centre half, and now he's picking the ball out, and I'm saying, it's behind you, Rog. He was a big lad. I thought he was going to chase me, but yeah.
And what was your celebration back in the day then?
Just keep running that way. Oh, lovely. Yeah, no, it's good days.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Of all the interviews that I've done over the years, I think my favourite quotes come from your wife, Pauline, who you mentioned earlier in the podcast. And she said, football comes first in Neil's life. And when we had a golden retriever, I came third. Yeah. I've moved up to second now. Is she right?
No, she's third again. We've got another golden retriever now. I've got Harpo. Yeah, I take him for a walk. So she's back down. It is funny because when you see people they see me and I'm walking with Donald, I've always got the phone on one ear and the dog's lead on the other. So no, she's great. She's been great for me. And she knows with football, and she knows if we lose on a Saturday, it's not going to be a very good evening. And we never arrange to go out Saturday nights now, because she knows if we got to win the game. But I've just read another Harry Redknapp's latest book, and it's funny, his wife said exactly the same. Pauline, she bought it and she's showing me, look, that's you on a Saturday, miserable as anything. About Monday, you're right again.
So because it means so much, you are a bad loser for a short while, is that
fair to say? Yeah, and it's a shame. You think it's something will go away as you get older. And obviously you say there, how long I've been doing management, but it doesn't change. No, it's horrible. In fact, I think it's worse, because you're getting older and you don't lose hardly any game now, So, yeah, that's the... Yeah, so she goes through a little bit sometimes Saturdays, and she's doing the bar anyway, so, bless her.
But then if it didn't hurt you, you probably still wouldn't be in
the
dugout,
would you? No, don't do the job then, because it's, you're doing it for the wrong reasons, aren't you? It's the result that matters, isn't it? That's why you do it, and that's why, people say, why do you still do the job? It's just the sheer buzz of that winning on the Saturday. It's brilliant.
Very few, if any, managers, I think, in the future will stay at one club as long as you've stayed at Folkestone. So two questions. What makes a good manager, and how do you find the sort of the energy and the enthusiasm to rebuild the team over time?
First one's a bit of luck, really, and obviously you've got to get results. And it's not easy to stay in football, anybody thinks. It's a hard old slog, and as you say, you've still got to get results or have an excuse when I got a couple of relegations against me. But as I say, I don't think that was my fault when you haven't got any money at all to play with. And how do you get enthusiasm? Said that really, if you just see me after we won a game on a Saturday, it's the buzz that you do it for. That's what you enjoy. And I think it's... being organised. As long as you're organised, you're getting your friendlies sorted out. And when you say about, you know, you've done it so long, it's as soon as that sort of March comes, you're starting to think about pre-season. Then April comes, you're thinking about players, and then you're thinking about the pitch. So you're always going on to next season so quickly. So you're always planning. And okay, we talked a little bit about the past, but the past doesn't matter. You've got to look for the next game. And as soon as a game is finished, I'm thinking about either training or the next game. You have to do it that way, and it's no good, you know, worrying about until you show me all this list of what I've been through, and that you can't really remember it all, really.
How much longer do you think you would like to go on managing? Is it, you mentioned thinking that I'm not going to do this for a lot longer, so I want to keep winning and I don't want to lose matches. Is that something that's increasingly in your mind?
Yeah, a little bit. There's certain things you want to do in your life, and maybe football does tie you to mainly every Saturday, Tuesday, obviously Thursday, mostly Friday, and Saturday, as you say. So your whole life's planned around that. So, yeah, there's been a couple of times I thought if we got relegated a couple of years ago, I might have looked. But I wouldn't have left football then. I would definitely have done another challenge. And would I have another challenge in me? Maybe, I don't know. But there's another club, maybe, I don't know. But at the moment, I just want to really do well for Folkestone and keep that going.
Must be hard to imagine after that amount of time not doing what you're doing, surely?
Yeah, it would be, yeah. Sometimes you think it'd be for the best sometimes, and I'm sure there's still a few fans that think that, but no, I think I'm chuffed at what I've achieved, I've got to be honest. Yeah, really chuffed, and as you say about the finances over the years as well, it's been everything else as well as what, you know, to putting out teams, and I think most people know the teams that I put out, try and play attractive football and score goals. You know, we talk about quite a lot of players. I've had some great forwards, some really good forwards over my time, you know, and that helps.
You talk about the time at Folkestone as well, the longevity. Have you had a chance to go to other clubs and turn them down in the last 20 years or so?
Yeah, go quite a few actually at different times, and even had interviews at different times. You know, at the time, well, folks and I got no money, and somebody comes in. But as I said earlier, a lot of times you know that even the poor seasons, I've got players I know will do well next year. And of course, what happens, you mostly get the offers to manage when you've had a good season, for obvious reasons, and then because you're enjoying it, because you're having a good season, you turn them down thinking, well, no, I'm enjoying this, so why leave when you're enjoying it? So obviously a lot of the offers don't often come when you're not doing so well, but even now you still get agents like ring you and say, are you interested in a job, you know, because then obviously it doesn't get the chairman of whatever club into trouble, they're missing them out, so you still get them, so that's quite pleasing. Some people still want you, but no, basically being quite happy and just carried on.
When I look back at Neil Cugley at Folkestone, the thing that always strikes me is the goals that your teams have always scored and also to an extent conceded, unfortunately, as well. But you've always been high scoring in terms of the start of your career at Folkestone as manager. There was a lot of goals in the season, but also, funny enough, it's sort of gone full circle. The last few years, you've been involved in teams that have conceded and scored a lot of goals. Is that something that's deliberate on your part, Neil, that you want to be expansive in that way?
It's not deliberate, the goals you let in. And to be fair, when we were in the Ryman South, we were unbelievably tight. It's playing to your strength. At that time, we played literally a five at the back that hardly moved, and Friendly and Chappell and all that, and Jack Deal, I think, was in goal. I think we only conceded like 20 or 30 goals, hardly anything. So it matters what team you got. Just said there, over the years I've been lucky, I've had some really good forwards, so you play to your strengths. If you forward your strength, in that year we would have won the league if we didn't get our points deducted. That was a very defensive play, but our defence was our strength, so you play to your strengths. Said earlier, we've had people like Nicky Dent and people like that, and Dave Arter and Tatey, Dryden, Addy, you're playing to their strengths really. Let's get out of them and see what they're about. So you do become an attacking side. Yeah, I'd rather win 4-3 than 1-0 sometimes, but I think that's what people pay their money. Surely we've got a big, nice pitch. Go on, enjoy it, lads. Go on, get. But you don't just say to, you know, to your defence, don't do this and that. We do still like clean sheets. I've no doubt about that. Don't get me wrong. In the last five or six games, we look really good, and that's why I'm really pleased. We've got the same defence for next year.
you wheel off the list of strikers, and as you say, they are some really good players that you've worked with.
Yeah, you've got that Bouvier or Yoed. Oh, I could go on and on and on, you know. So there was, we have been really lucky. So, you know, we got the right ones in at the right time.
Good recruitment, I suggest.
Yeah, oh, that's what I say.
What separates a talented player from someone who goes on to have a really good career? Because there's plenty of people who don't go and fulfil that potential.
Obviously, I think dedication, obviously ability, age, everything comes into this sort of thing, doesn't it? So, and to be fair, down at Folkestone, a bit lucky, I'm lucky miles away, and I don't care who I am, the scouts don't like coming down to Folkestone because it's a long trip. They get a game in London, they'll go there, won't they? So there's got to be somebody a bit special if they come down to us, you know. So mostly when they do start coming down, obviously Tate we sold to Crawley and Harry Smith to Millwall, Johan to Hull, so that they will come down, but it takes a bit longer.
You keep in touch with people like Harry Smith, who went on and played as well as Millwall?
Just funny enough, Matt Newman, I try and make sure one of the lads always send Matt, hope you're right, everything's going all well. So you're pleased for him, yeah.
Mm. In terms of the future then, we've done the past, but the future at Folkestone, what do you think you'd still like to achieve there?
Well, I'd love to get in the playoffs again this year because they are good. Well, you know, people sometimes are for or against playoffs, but I think I quite enjoy them. I think they're real. I sometimes like the win or lose thing. You know, it really puts you under pressure. But you know, and you know the rules before we start. There's always these people say, "Oh, we come second, we should be promoted anyway." No, you know, before you start, you know, even when we've been second and got in the playoffs, you know the rules. So, you know, no, I think they've been a great thing for football, really. I've kept the leagues alive for a lot longer.
I bet you'd love one more real crack at the FA Cup and a big tie, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, of course you would, but it gets harder and harder because, as I say, the teams with money, you know, have the better players, and they all seem to be the ones that suddenly, you know, it's ironic, you need the money, and the ones that's got the money mostly likely finish up on telly and everything else. So you're always glad, like talked about Haringey before, you're pleased for them because, you know, they're not going to, might not ever do it again.
Quick fire questions, Neil. Best ground that you've played at? You said Anfield before. Is that your top
one? Because I was only 18 and suddenly you just don't think I'm playing. Well, actually, then I was playing for Ashford Reserves. I was in and out of the team at Ashford and suddenly you're running out at Anfield. So, yeah, you just don't forget something like that. So that was good.
What's the memories of that day?
We drew 0-0 and I got cut on my head. A lad called Chris Waddell or somebody like that was no centre forward, great big lad, and he elbowed me and had a big cut. So I had loads of stitches in their room at Anfield afterwards. So yeah, it was 0-0, so I didn't do too bad.
At least you saw more parts of the stadium than half of people there.
Yeah, seen it almost. Yeah, obviously it's changed a lot as well now, but it's a nice thing to say. And Brian Robson played every game I played for at West Brom. You know, John Truitt, they had a really good side, and it's great looking back.
I was going to say, who's the best player you've played alongside back in the day?
But that would have been, I said, Brian Robson. Yeah. But my favourite player was, I think, Frank Ovard. I think he was my favourite player. I played in non-league, you know, and I played alongside Frank for years, and he made most of my goals. So.
At Folkestone, who's the best signing that you've made in terms of, not necessarily the one who's done the best for you, but the one that you thought you weren't going to get, and he's actually come and played for you?
I think, yeah, Jimmy Jackson would come into that equation. Just didn't realise what such a, you know, good player and a good person he'd be for our club at that time, you know, and still hang around when he could have said, well, I'm not, you know, I'm playing a bunch of kids. But he liked that thing that I suppose they looked up to him, and that was a good one to have.
If money was no object, and obviously it is, which player that you came up against last season would you like to bring in?
I think everybody, we went to the league dinner and I see you got in the league. I think Jason Parra really was exceptional for our league. I mean, I was talking to their chairman, and obviously it cost them a lot of money to get him, but he done the business, didn't he? And sometimes that's the difference. And I think him really was something else. I've got to say that.
Who do you call up if you need advice or you just want to sound off to somebody?
I had a little spell with John Still. I used to speak to him a fair bit and advice when you're a bit younger. How would you handle this? Well, I've only got these number of players. How would you play this formation? I've only got this, why not try that, you know, because sometimes it was literally you'd finish, hang on, I haven't got the right balance, the team, how would you do that? He I wouldn't say he's a great friend, but he was one I would talk to, you know, he was good.
I just wonder about your current Folkestone squad, apart from Michael Everett, who we've spoken about already. Are there any players in there who you think you're going to be a coach or a manager in the future?
It matters again with their job, really. Callum Davis is a good lad, and he's captain, and he's knowledgeable about football, but obviously he's training to be something different than away from football, I think. So it matters if they want the hassle of it, you know. If people don't understand, it's a lot harder. And yeah, it's all right for me because I've done 20 odd years, but those, as you said, I think those days are over, you know. 2 years here and 3 years here is gonna be maximum, isn't it?
Do you get many young managers tap into you for your experience?
It's quite nice. You do get you get appreciated. I mean, people do ring up and, you know, say things and ask you your advice, and I'll always give it to them. And sometimes it's not what they want to hear, but sometimes it is. And I try and you know, say when somebody gets a new job, I always try and to text them if I know them before and things like that. So yeah, keep in touch with quite a few. I'm not obsessed by the phone and set, apart from Folkestone work, really. I'm not one of them that's ringing up everybody here and there and doing that. Some managers are, but I'm not.
Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure for me and Steve to sit down and talk to you for the last hour or so.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in.
No, thank you. Well, I enjoyed it, actually. I forgot what I did.
And we wish you all the best at Folkestone this season coming up, and hopefully we'll see you in those playoffs.
Thank you very much. Makes sense.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.